foundational to how we think about our children, our families, and how we parent. We have to remember that God is in control of everything, the good and the bad, and he will bring about his purposes. Romans 8:28 tells us, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him and have been called according to his purpose. So God is in control of all things. And secondly, we know that God's ultimate goal is to glorify his Son, Jesus, and to bring all things in heaven and earth under him. And then thirdly, as Jesus is glorified, we who love God will share in his glory. And fourthly, Galatians tells us that we can have forgiveness. Forgiveness for our sins because Jesus has taken the punishment that we deserve for adoring God. And it's these really key things that should be our horizon, our focus, our north point in terms of how we direct our lives. God is in control. The end point is to honour Jesus. If we love him, we will share in this. And most importantly, we can find forgiveness with God because of the death of his Son. Now, as Christian women, the Bible tells us that we have responsibilities, or there's guidelines as to what we should be aiming to do. As Christian women, the Bible encourages and implores us to grow more like Christ. As women, the Bible makes it clear to us that we're to help others live a life of faith. I know in the post-Olympics kind of haze, is that the Christian life is not like swimming or track, where you just do your own thing. The Christian life is more like hockey or soccer. It's a team event. So, you know, we have responsibility for the rest of the team to encourage them to keep living a life of faith. So we have a responsibility to each other, and how we live has a big impact on our fellow Christian families, Christian women, Christian people in our churches. And we are also called to take responsibility for those, we have to take responsibility for, which is our children and families, our children and parents, sorry. So our children and parents are people who we should be taking care of and be taking responsibility for. So we've talked generally in terms of our Christian lives, then as Christian women, what are our responsibilities? And then if we drill down further, what does the Bible say when it comes to our families? When it comes to our families, the Bible makes it clear that our responsibilities are to honour our parents, to respect our husbands, and to bring up our children to know and love God, and to teach younger women how to love their families. And then if we drill down even further to our children, this is all very quick, so sorry there's so much, others will be here all night. So this is important foundational stuff to put out there before we get going. If we look at our responsibilities, the Bible makes it clear that we're to fulfill in regards to children, we're to teach them about God, we are to model a life of faith, and we are to teach them the way of wisdom. Teach them the way of wisdom. And I know this is brief, but it's important to touch on these broad parameters or guidelines that God wants us to follow, that are key to how we need to make decisions in our lives and what our focus should be as parents, because they inform our focus as parents. Now, although focus on having God as the most important thing in my life and my family life has shifted. And all of a sudden, the thing that is determining everything sometimes is my children, or sometimes it might be something else. All of a sudden, in practice, our children have become the thing we worship, although in word, we say we worship God. In practice, sometimes we find that what we're doing is not worshipping God, we're worshipping our children. So tonight, I want us to bravely face our family focus and think about what things cause us to slip into having children as our focus, as the thing we worship within our families, that drag us away from our north point of worshipping God. Now, this might be your situation, or it might be a cautionary tale to help you not to do that. So I don't know your various life circumstances, but if you're on the money now, fantastic, keep doing it, and maybe this will really help you to keep that focus on God. So, the first thing I wanted to talk about that often consumes us as parents and becomes our focus is that we want to protect our children from anything that might be difficult. Psychologists tell me that they are facing an avalanche of referrals of young adults that are struggling with anxiety and depression who have finished school and they're just entering university or work. They are from families that are well-to-do, who have been afforded anything and everything that they have needed. They have lacked nothing their entire childhood. Their families have nice homes, they went to nice schools, they have nice cars, and they did at least one extra activity every afternoon. These young adults are for the first time entering the real world of relationships and work and are depressed and confused, and often turning to alcohol and drugs to dampen their pain. And parents are often confused as they reflect on their efforts to provide their children with everything necessary to set them up for a life of success and wonder where it all went wrong. In our well-intentioned efforts to create happy, worry-free childhoods for our children, sometimes what has happened is that we overparent our children. And instead of growing strong, resilient children who grow into strong, stable, mature adults, like strong trees, instead we create over-nurtured bonsai children, children who lack the skills and resilience needed to manage in the real world. Now, we might do this by adopting a bulldozer parenting style, where we go ahead and we make sure everything is perfect for them. We smooth the way so there is nothing difficult for them to negotiate. Things are plain sailing. For example, say I hear there's a mean first grade teacher. So I'm up at the school. I am so up at the school making sure that they don't get that teacher next year. I am lobbying from halfway through the year. I don't want my children to experience anything too difficult or negative, so I remove that obstacle so they might not have to deal with those difficult issues anymore. When we do this, eventually what happens is that we increase anxiety in our children because they've never experienced solving a problem on their own, because they've never done it, and they lack the confidence in their own ability to do so. When an issue is sprung on them, which it will, they can't figure out what to do because they're used to us always solving the problem, always fixing it. Alternatively, in order to keep our kids happy, I might use the helicopter parenting style, where I hover around my child and intervene at every necessary moment, so things, if things don't go well, I can fix it up instantly. And And this can start in toddlerhood, when we are always hovering, directing our child's behaviour, to primary and high school, where we choose friends and do our kids' projects. Or if we find out major projects are due the next day, we drop everything and do whatever it takes to personally complete the project well. Even on to uni and work age, where we are the ones calling the lecturers, tutors and employers if they are unwell or just don't feel like turning up. Unfortunately, doing these things create children who become teenagers and adults who have no resilience. And what is that? They have no internal or personal characteristics that enable them to bounce back from adversity. Okay, resilience. They have no internal or personal characteristics that enable them to bounce back from adversity. When things go wrong and don't go their way, they fall apart. The characteristics that help resilience are built throughout childhood as we get exposed to difficulties and develop strategies that help us bounce back. Both bulldozer and helicopter parenting, while terribly well-intentioned and meant to protect our children from short-term harm, ultimately results in psychologically fragile children. Children who are fearful and avoid failure, with never learned coping strategies and poor resilience. With helicopter parenting, the underlying message for our over-involvement is, my parent can't trust me to do this on my own, and this leads to a lack of confidence. And if we're always there to clean up our children's mess or prevent the problem in the first place, how does the child ever learn to cope with loss, disappointment or failure? Studies have found that helicopter parenting can make children feel less confident in dealing with the stresses in their own life. A study I read recently from the University of Mary Washington, unusual name for a university, has shown that overparenting is associated with higher levels of child anxiety and depression. Children who have always had their social, academic and athletic lives adjusted by their parents to best fit their needs can become accustomed to always having their own way and start to develop a sense of entitlement. Parents who always tie their children's shoes, clear their plates, pack their lunches, wash their clothes and monitor their school progress, even after their children are mentally and physically able to do so, the key sentence, they prevent their children from mastering these skills themselves. Failure and challenges teach kids new skills. Failure and challenges teach kids new skills. And most importantly, teach kids that they can handle failure and challenges. It's hard to keep in mind all the things children learn when we are not standing right next to them, guiding each step. There was a terrific article in the Sydney Morning Herald last year where they interviewed Jeff Locke about the new book, The Bonsai Child. Can I encourage you to pick it up? It's a really helpful read. When the Bible tells us to train up a child in the way they should go, it's important to know that it says train. They aren't born with all the skills and behaviours and knowledge that they need. They have to be trained. Don't despair when they're really naughty or they fail. That's the whole point. We're supposed to be training them. That's why we're their parents. We're their trainers. As parents, we are the trainers. Protecting our kids from the schoolyard bully, the friend who steals their toys, giving them so much money that they've never had to learn to earn it or save it or work for it, saving them from their schoolwork disorganisation, does our children a great disservice because they enter adulthood with few skills that help them through life. We need to let them experience real life, which rarely goes smoothly, as we know, often involves failure and disappointment and hurt. I was moved a few years ago when a young 19-year-old fellow near where we live, he came from a well-off family, went to a terrific school, was the model of success, lacked nothing, was given everything he wanted. He killed himself. And what was most shocking was the event that triggered this terrible, terrible episode was that his girlfriend broke up with him. I was so saddened as I heard family and friends speak of their loss and their disbelief, understandably. And embedded in most of their statements were the lines, he had everything going for him. Like, he had everything he needed. He had been successful at everything. We just can't understand how this happened. But sadly, the seeds for this catastrophic event were sown from childhood. And if the truth be told, this was the very first time that anyone had said no to him and meant it. It was the first time he had failed at anything. It was the very first time he had not got his own way, the very first time that his mum had not been able to fix a problem, or his dad had not been able to buy something to make it better. And he had no skills to handle it. So like so many young men who can't see a way out of failure and despair, he ended his life. It's really important not to protect our kids from pain and difficulty. Sometimes our family focus is our children and we worship them. We live in a child-centred society and our children love this. And of course, because our, why wouldn't you? Because our lives revolve around them. And for the most part, we don't mind either because their happiness is our happiness. It thrills us to do things for them, to buy things for them, to shower them with love and attention. And if someone was to look through the keyhole of some of our homes, they see children ruling like mini sun gods and parents running around like mindless minions, catering for their every whim, every perceived need. They see parents worrying that any wrong move will ruin their kids' lives. I think it's really important to keep in mind that God gave us our children to be loved, not worshipped. So when we treat them like the centre of the universe, instead of God, who made the universe and us, we create a false idol and we turn it, something that was good, our children, into the ultimate, which it shouldn't be. And having our children at the centre of the universe can have terrible consequences for them. We've just talked about the issues with some of these children with resilience. It's easy for us as parents to overestimate how much our kids' future depends on us. Depends on us and the opportunities that we can provide them. Brian Kaplan is a professor of economics at George Mason, a university in the US, and he wrote a book cheekily named Selfish Reasons to Have More Kids. And in the book, he points to all the twin studies, which show that, and you know those twin studies, where, you know, the twins meet separated at birth and they've had really different experiences and how does that, you know, play out in both of their lives. They're very helpful because genetically they're the same. So anyway, he looks at all the twin studies. And it was very interesting because in these studies, almost every desirable trait that we as parents want to pass on to our children or imbue in our children through all the things that we do and give and, you know, whatever, from health to happiness to intelligence and success, they're all due to things that a child is born with rather than anything that we might nurture in them. Go figure. Now, I'm not saying that nothing influences our children. Obviously, taking a child from an orphanage in the Ukraine and putting them here in sunny Asquith is going to make a huge difference to their lives. We're not talking about that kind of thing. The point is, of the book, was to tell parents to stop killing themselves, trying to offer their kids all of these things, offer them everything available, every activity, every opportunity, killing themselves to give their kids all these things, because you know what? Their life outcome doesn't depend on it. And it always has no influence on what their life outcome will be. Kaplan says, don't have less children for fear that you won't be able to offer them everything you think they need for success. Because the research says it makes no difference. So have more kids. Knock yourself out. Interestingly, the things that the twin studies do show that have a big influence, that we can have a big influence on our children with, are religion and politics. How would you be? Isn't it funny that the Bible tells us to bring up our kids in the knowledge and love of God, because that will have a huge influence on their lives. Growing up in a home where you are worshipped not only makes no difference to your success in life, but it can make you selfish and obnoxious. And we've all worked with those adults, haven't we? So rather than child-centred homes, we should strive for God-centred homes. Our children will still be loved, but only in a better way. In a home that promotes selflessness over selfishness. We naturally think that parenting is about being on our children's side, being in their corner, seeking their growth. But really, with just us as their model, we can really limit their growth. Because we are flawed and broken. I don't know about you, but I am flawed and broken. And if you don't think you are, you know, good luck to you. You might have noticed that your kids emulate, well, at least mine do, emulate the very worst aspects of our personalities. Kills me. But with God in our families, He is the ultimate model. Not only that, He is the one that can produce real change and real growth, not only in our lives, but in their lives too, as He changes us to be more like Him. Another problem when we fall into the trap of worshipping our children is that we start believing our children are perfect. And in an odd way, this can be a bit of a focus in some of our families. One thing I see in my clinic daily and hear from other professionals who work with children, as you know, counsellors and teachers, is that parents don't want to hear anything negative about their kids. So many parents feel that their children are gifted and talented and perfect when they're clearly not. And if anyone raises concerns about their child, even if the concerns are voiced out of love, the knee-jerk reaction is often to attack the messenger. The truth is that none of us are perfect. It's naive to think that our children will be any different. Having a true understanding of our brokenness is so important for us and our children, because without it, we will never come to the realization that we need God for forgiveness. Which we do. We clearly do. All humans are broken. Our children need to understand this, but also to know that God has provided the ultimate solution for forgiveness and repair by sending His Son. Hearing the truth about our children can hurt, but when we listen with an open heart and an open mind, we stand to benefit. And we can intervene early before a situation gets out of hand. It's easier to deal with a troubled child than repair a broken adult. Any adolescent psychiatrist will tell you that early intervention is key, because it can change the trajectory of a child's life. It's a lot easier to intervene early in a child when they're young, instead of years later when the problem has gone on so long it's become incorporated into part of their identity. We need to get a grip on reality and stop believing our children are perfect, because like us, they're not. And to point four. Oh yeah, and sorry, Romans 3. None of us are righteous, not one. No one understands and no one thinks God. We are all broken, we're all fallen. Mistake number four is that when we worship our children and have them at the centre of our lives, our family focus can be that we start living vicariously through them. We start to live our lives through our kids. Then we parents take great pride in our children when they succeed. It makes us happier. Happier than if we'd done it ourselves sometimes. But if we're overly involved and overly invested in their lives, it gets hard to see where they end and we begin. When our children become extensions of us, we may see them as our second chance. Suddenly it's not about them at all. It's about us. And this is where their happiness starts getting confused with our happiness. And that's really not a healthy place for them or us. And worshipping our kids and having them as the driving force in our families can lead us to wanting to be our kids' BFF. Best friend forever. That's code for. And making them happy. I heard Michael Carr Gregg, a well-known psychologist, recently talking about common problems he sees in parenting. And he said, the big problem is parents not being parents, not stepping up to the plate to do the hard things. Parents need to be just that, to be the parent, not the BFF. Because you know what? The only way to be the BFF of a child or an adolescent is to make them happy. Which is to let them do what they want. That's the only thing that makes a child and an adolescent happy, is give them their own way. And that is so not what they need. Like everyone, I want my children to love me. I want them to sing my praises and appreciate me. But if I'm doing my job right, they'll get mad and they'll not like me sometimes. A lot, actually. They'll roll their eyes and they'll moan and they'll groan and they'll wish they had been born in another family. And I'll say, just knock yourself out, honey, up you go. And they might even shout, I hate you. The best statement in my family has been, you're stricter than the world's strictest parents, and that's nothing to be proud of. Oh, that is a badge of honour. Children, and especially teenagers, need clear, firm boundaries. And even though they say they hate us at the time, deep down they are glad that somebody is applying the brakes because they can't. Someone is setting the limits because they can't. One day they will be glad that somebody monitored their internet use. That somebody monitored their Facebook page. That somebody said no to going to a party of 75 15-year-olds without a responsible adult. Just picking a few things from my recent weeks. How unreasonable. Seeking to be our child's BFF can only lead to us having poor boundaries, letting our kids make very poor decisions, and us making choices out of desperation because we fear losing their approval and making them unhappy. That's not love on our part. That's need. That is needy parenting. God has given us such an important role, in our child's life, in our children's lives. And it's not a popularity contest. We have to step up and be the parent for their sakes. As parents, it's easy for us to lose sight of the fact that happiness is a fleeting emotion. It's not something that we pursue, because whatever makes us happy lasts for a minute, an hour, maybe a day, and then we just need more of it. As parents, we forget that the most important thing for our children is not that they experience temporary happiness, because that's what it is, it's temporary, but that they develop character, moral fibre, an inner compass. These things lay the foundation of a worthwhile life and good mental health, much more than any trophy or report card will. None of us can force character on our kids. At age 10 or 15, character won't mean much to them. But as parents, we know better. Children care about short-term gratification. We know what will matter at 25, at 30, and at 40. And it's not how far they threw a football. It's not how many times they got to training at 5 a.m., how many competitions they won. But what matters is how they treat others and what they think of themselves, and do they have a relationship with the God of the universe. If we want them to build character, confidence, strength and resilience, we need to let them face adversity and experience the pride that follows when they come out stronger on the other side. I think if we're honest, the kind of people we long to be and the kind of children that we'd like to raise are those not those that long for more pleasure or for less pain or for more stuff, but for those who can say, like Paul in Philippians, that I have learned the secret of being content in every situation. The fruit of godly wisdom is contentment, not chasing happiness. And it's God who gives us our moral compass. It's what he thinks is our guide. Reading how God wants us to behave and live in his word anchors our lives, and it will anchor the lives of our children. Deciding these things for ourselves just means that we're standing in the place of God. We're telling God that he has no business telling us how to run our lives. We steal his crown and wear it for ourselves. We become the arbiter of what is right and fair. It's really hard to see our children fall and fail, but sometimes we have to. And sometimes we have to ask ourselves whether intervening is in their best interests. Sometimes the driving force in our families might not be our children. They might be pursuing careers or accumulating stuff or money or houses. And like all things in lives, in our lives, these things aren't bad in themselves. But having them as the driving force in our lives and the lives of our families means that they're our God, whether we realise it or not. And when we worship the creation rather than the creator, that's God, our lives become upside down. And we don't have a relationship with the God who created us. We have to remember in our families that our actions speak louder than our words, and our example overshadows anything we might say. So when we decide not to worry about what God has to say and think our kids can make up their own minds, our actions have shouted to them what we think they should do. How I handle adversity, how I handle rejection, how I treat friends and strangers, whether I nag or build up their father, children notice these things. The way I respond gives them permission to act the same way. What I have as the driving force in my life, or in the family as a whole, gives them permission to have the same. And if I want my children to be wonderful and love God, I need to aim for wonderful and to love God as well. I need to be the person that I hope they'll be. But I also need to point them to God, because I'm broken. I want them to aspire to be better than me. In life, it's easy to be so busy doing that we don't reflect. And I hope that what we've talked about tonight might have encouraged you to reflect on your own family focus. Think about who it is that you worship or what it is that you worship. Is it our children? Is it God or is it something else? We need to ask ourselves the hard questions that we often avoid just because we haven't even got time to think about it. If we claim to love God, does our life and our family focus reflect it? There's a few resources that we've got here on the bookstore. Store, which you might have already seen, but if you haven't, have a look at it over supper. There's a great book called Crazy Busy by Kevin DeYoung. The really good thing is, if you're really too busy to read, you can just read the last chapter and he has really fantastic things to say. I think it's really relevant to people who live in a busy, big city like Sydney. And we lose sight of what is important just because we're crazy busy and we need to stop and think. Great book. Gospel Centered Family by Tim Chester and Ed Moll. Tim Chester always writes fantastic stuff. Becoming the Parents You Want to Be. Fantastic book. Great author. There's Bible Bites, 365 devotions for Aussie families. So if you really want to think, look, you know what, we really need to have God back at the centre of our family life, and you don't know where to start, fantastic book to sit and read with your family. As are these for smaller kids, Table Talk for Families with just exploring the Bible together, particularly for younger children. And there's the Big Picture Family Devotional, which is launched, I think it's rides on the back of the Big Picture Family Bible, which is a great resource as well. And then, look, I've just brought along some brochures for 1-2-3 Magic as a parenting course. I don't know where you are in your parenting journey. If you've got small to teenage children. This is a secular organisation, but has fantastic parenting resources. Because people expect us to know how to parent, how to help with difficult behaviours in our children, where we're really just replicating what we have seen as we've grown up, and sometimes that hasn't been that flash, but we don't know anything else. Great resource. You can buy their DVDs. You don't even need to go to a course. You can just